This is Greater LA, KCRW show that connects you to the people and places and pets of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have you ever wondered what it would be like if you could talk to your dog? Christina Hunger did, and she says it is possible.
A lot of my friends thought I was crazy when I was trying this. You know, for weeks they would come over and they would see me modeling these words, and they're like, you know, has anyone done this? Like, is she supposed to push these, or, you know, what are you doing here?
Christina Hunger is a speech-language pathologist in San Diego. She helps children find ways other than talking to communicate. She uses different kinds of talking keyboards with her clients, and one day she decided to try teaching her dog Stella to use one of those keyboards.
Do you want to go for a walk? Or go to the beach? Or the park?
There are videos online, and in those videos, the dog seems to ask for things that she wants and actually looks satisfied when she gets them. It seems to work, or does it? Is this a breakthrough in pet communication, or is it wishful thinking? Maybe it's some of both. Here's KCRW's Cerise Castle.
And some belly rubs first.
Christina Hunger wasn't looking for a way for her dog to talk to her. But when she brought home an 8-week-old Australian cattle dog, Catahoula Mix, that she found on Craigslist, she got curious.
All I saw was all of the ways that she was communicating non-verbally, with her eye contact, with her gestures, with her vocalizations. And I was watching how she was understanding words so quickly, making associations between, you know, when we say outside, she runs to the door. And when we say no, she stops what she's doing. And so I just thought, you know, I wonder if she had a different way to say words, if she would be able to communicate more effectively with us.
So she started looking for a device like what she was using at work. As a speech-language pathologist, she uses all kinds of different tools to help children communicate. One of those is something called an AAC board. It's a series of buttons, and each of those buttons correspond with a word. When you press the button for something like water, you hear the word water. So Hunger started looking for one, but for her dog, Stella.
So I researched dog AAC, you know, using speech therapy with dogs, dog communication devices. And I was actually really surprised when I could not find anything that I was picturing, because it just seemed so obvious to me. So then I just Googled recordable AAC button, and I saw these buttons that Learning Resources made pop right up on my screen.
So she ordered the buttons. They came in a pack of four. Each button is black and about 3 inches wide. The base is a different color for each one. Hunger set up the blue one on the floor of her house, near the front door, and recorded herself saying outside on it. When the button was pushed, you would hear Hunger's voice.
So we were taking her out so frequently throughout the day that we had so many opportunities to practice staying outside. So every time we took Stella outside, we would push the outside button with our foot and stay outside and then take her out. Throughout the first couple of weeks, she started just standing near the button and looking up at me. And then she started barking at the button. And then she started walking and like swatting at the area near the button, but not quite the button. And then finally, she started actually swatting at the button and standing by the door.
Hunger kept modeling the outside button, and after about 3 weeks, Stella used it for the first time. The day after she said outside, she said play. That was the button they had been using when they would grab one of Stella's balls and fetch. The day after she said play, she said water, which had been used to correspond with her water dish. From that point on, Stella was using the buttons independently. 2 years later, she is using 40 different words.
In the very beginning, she just was requesting basic needs. You know, she needed to go outside, she needed to have more water, she wanted to play. But now she communicates about so much that's happening in the environment. She talks about what she sees. She talks about how she's feeling. We'll talk about where she wants to go, what she wants to do. She notices if something's different in the routine, and we'll talk about it. So you know, if we're eating way later than normal, she'll make a comment about it.
So when I say she's not talking, I'm saying she's not using words in the way that humans use words. She's communicating all over the place, and we can gloss those communications with human words.
Alexandra Horowitz is a professor at Barnard College, Columbia University, where she heads the Dog Cognition Lab. She says that it's wonderful that Dr. Hunger and Stella have gotten people interested in dog communication, but that Stella isn't talking. Gadgets that help your dog communicate in human languages aren't really that new. Companies started selling what they claimed to be bark translators almost 10 years ago. Horowitz says these things aren't exactly scientific, but they can be helpful when making sense of your dog's communication cues.
It's not a translator of the dog's inner thoughts suddenly. It's a training. It's an engagement between a person and dog over a long period of time. I'd rather that we just sort of observe the dog on their own terms and try to see what they're telling us in their own language. I don't think it's harmful. I just, at minimum, it will get people to be listening to their dogs, right? And caring what they say, which isn't always the case.
Other researchers are more excited about the possibilities. Leo Trottier has a background in cognitive science and AI. He set up a company called Clever Pet in 2014 that built a gaming system for dogs, something to keep them entertained and engaged while you're out of the house. Leo developed Clever Pet as a means to get a little glimpse into how dogs think. Then last year, he saw something that completely changed how he was looking at his work. Christina Hunger and her dog, Stella.
I was just like blown away. I was like, this is going to change everything.
He developed a set of recordable AAC buttons specifically for dogs. They're mounted on a hexagonal piece of plywood with Velcro. He reached out to Dr. Hunger and a few other dog owners that were using AAC with their dogs to get some users to test out his board. That's how he found Alexis Devine and her sheepadoodle, Bunny.
All done walking for today, Buns. Yeah, we're home now.
Love you.
Oh, I love you too, Bunny.
Devine is a Washington dancer and artist who saw Hunger's videos. She adopted Bunny almost a year ago. And when she brought Bunny home, she decided they would start using the board together. Like Christina Hunger, they started with outside, and now she's up to 26 words. Devine says it's been a fun journey filled with surprises.
I feel like once a day, Bunny will do something that just sort of blows my mind to the point where, like, okay, let's keep going. Let's see what happens next. She's learning so quickly. It's just sort of an amazing process, so we'll take it as far as we can.
In March, Trottier created a beta test group of about 30 people out of thousands of applicants to test a new AAC board for dogs that he wants to bring to market. Trottier says they're seeing incredible results as dogs start to master their boards.
Before they had buttons, before they could use their words, which is one of the phrases, use your words. Before that was possible, dogs would kind of just like whine and stare. And now when that starts happening, people say, use your words, and it seems like the dogs whine less.
He says he sold out of his new AAC board in just 11 days. Dr. Hunger thinks we're just scratching the surface of what is possible with dog AAC.
I think a lot of people see their own dogs and Stella, and they see the things that she's communicating about and the other ways that she's communicating, and they're connecting it to their own pets in their own home and seeing how big of a difference this could make and how much sense it makes.
Horowitz, the more skeptical scientist, also says there will always be a market for this kind of thing just by the virtue that humans want to hear their dogs talk to them. I'm one of them. I got my Chiweenie some recordable buttons. She's not telling me she loves me yet, but we are making progress.
Outside.
For KCRW, I'm Cerise Castle.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car. Already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
After months of safer at home orders and a world less traveled, you're probably itching to get away for some kind of summer vacation. Those killer airline and hotel deals are filling up your email inbox, and they're hard to ignore. That's how Jason Welly felt.
I had some use it or lose it vacation, so I had to take the time off anyway. And I haven't gone anywhere. So I've really just been in the house more or less since this started in March. So I wanted to get away. I wanted to find a place where I knew that I could go and be on my own, but really to be socially distant. And Mammoth seemed like a good place since I knew I could get a condo on my own.
Mammoth is a good place, by the way. Like Jason, a lot of folks who live in California want to avoid crossing state lines and stick to what their golden state home has to offer. Are you thinking you need to get away? What are your options? And how can you travel safely and responsibly in this tumultuous time? Catherine Hamm is the former travel editor over at the LA Times, where she's now a contributor. Catherine, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Before you can start enjoying your destination, wherever that might be, Mammoth or Mount Shasta or, you know, maybe San Francisco, wherever you're going to go in California, you have to get there. And based on your reporting, what are the best ways to get there? Is it driving?
I think everybody is choosing driving as a safe and self-contained way to get somewhere. You're not sitting next to people you don't know. You're not going through big terminals full of people.
Is flying safe, though? You mentioned, you know, getting next to somebody you don't know.
It's hard to say whether flying is safe. I don't think we've had any cases reported of people who have contracted COVID on a flight. But by the same token, I'm not sure that they're checking that either. The good news about air travel is that the circulation systems in aircraft are really of high quality. The bad news, of course, is that you have to wear a mask, but not everybody is complying, and enforcement can be spotty.
People are going to be driving, as you say, more. And I think there's been a big surge, we've been reporting, in RV rentals and camping this summer. But not every family is going to feel comfortable roughing it in the outdoors. So what's safer, in your opinion, booking a hotel room or maybe an Airbnb or just pitching a tent somewhere?
Well, if you want to stay in contact with your own germs, pitching a tent and making sure that it's your own tent definitely keeps you within your own germ system. However, I have seen numerous cleaning protocols from hotel chains across the country. And of course, it is to their advantage to be sure that customers feel comfortable. A dead customer is not a good customer. And they have really, many of them, bent over backwards to create an atmosphere and to create the reality that these are safe places, down to cleaning a room and closing it and sealing it with a seal that you break when you open the door.
Hotels are different than Airbnbs. Airbnb obviously is somebody's home. Let's hear from a guy named Kirk Donovan, who was worried about how clean an Airbnb would be. And he mentioned this deep cleaning concept.
There are some Airbnbs, when you go on the site, some I've seen say that they are practicing essentially extreme turnover cleaning because of COVID, so that it's beyond what you would normally expect at a regular Airbnb. And I'm wondering if this is translating also to hotels, that they are adhering to this policy that is uniform.
Airbnb also has a specific set of cleaning protocols, and it asks, for example, that if you cannot do all the points of its super cleaning protocol, that you leave the room empty for a certain period of time, or the space empty for a certain period of time, so that germs dissipate. So if you're uncomfortable, make sure that you look on Airbnb for those properties that are sort of the super cleaner properties that do follow these protocols.
What about places, Catherine, where people, you know, go? Maybe you leave LA and you go to a more rural area. Another traveler named Eileen Perry had some concerns about leaving a COVID hotspot like LA County and going to, she wants to go with her boyfriend to Idlewild, which is, of course, you know, east, going toward the desert, right? But a beautiful, well, it's called Idlewild. It's an idyllic place, right? Let's hear from Eileen.
You know, I recognize I'm coming from Los Angeles, which is a major COVID hotspot, and I don't want to make people in more remote locales feel uncomfortable by us, like, coming there. And but, you know, just in the event, like, I don't want people getting upset that people from LA are, like, traveling to their town and maybe, like, taking up their resources that might be limited to start with.
How do you suggest people navigate that, you know, that conflicting feeling on the inside? They want to travel to a rural, sparsely populated place, but they don't want to make the locals there feel unsafe.
Well, I think it's a double-edged sword because, first of all, these are areas that rely heavily on tourism and they are hurting. They also, that's their business, is hospitality, to make people feel welcome. On the other hand, if you feel a twinge, I say pay attention to that, because whatever the outcome of that, whether you're going to run into people who are unhappy that you were there, if you don't feel comfortable going in simply because you think you represent a threat to other people, pay attention. You don't want to spend your entire time away worrying about whether you're inflicting yourself on other people. It's just not worth it.
You know, what's fascinating to me, Catherine, ever since these stay-at-home orders were implemented, gosh, back in March, they were never unimplemented, right? I mean, we're still under stay-at-home orders in California, so any travel must be essential, right? And going on vacation, I suspect, is not essential. What are the mixed messages out there that the state is putting out?
There are some mixed messages, and we are to avoid non-essential travel. That is a real dilemma for a whole lot of people, including those, and I'm one of them, who believe that travel is good for the soul. And right now, our souls do need a little replenishing. So it's okay, I think, to wander around your own backyard. And by your own backyard, I mean within Southern California, there are so many places that are looking for you to come back and hope you will spend your dollars there. I think it is good for your mental well-being. I think that it is good for your physical well-being, as long as you remember to practice social distancing and other rules of the new road.
You're not going to get in any trouble, though. Like, you know, someone's not going to pull you over and be like, hey, is your travel essential?
I don't think so. I think we have other things that we need to enforce. I mean, I think we'll see that probably about the same time we see the mask police, which I think will be never. So it is, you know, as they always used to say, let your conscience be your guide.
Let your conscience be your guide, and obviously let it guide you to where you need to be to replenish, as you say, your soul. Catherine Hamm, the former travel editor over at the LA Times, now a contributor at the newspaper. Catherine, thanks.
Thank you.
Back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Screens make up your life. I know they make up mine. You're probably looking at a screen right now, and if you're not, you will be very, very soon. Smartphones, televisions, computers, laptops, yes, even billboards that advertise things. Those pixelated, bright, moving messages are big business, but they are also controversial, those big advertising mechanisms. They've been banned in many cities in the Southland, but they have not been banned in West Hollywood. Actually, WeHo has chosen to embrace the artistic potential of digital billboards and at the same time bring in some money. The city's devised a process to choose new billboard designs that would be visually interesting and give back to the city through revenues or cultural facilities. KCRW's Francis Anderton, who covers design and architecture for us, was on a committee that actually helped select which digital billboards will be built in WeHo, and she's here to tell us more about it. Hey, Francis.
Hello, Steve.
You're not reporting on this story for us. You actually are part of the story because you're on a committee to look at these billboards. Tell us more about what you're doing in West Hollywood.
Sure, and I should say it's a great honour to have been a participant in this process. As you mentioned, the City of West Hollywood has decided to embrace billboards, digital billboards, but with conditions. This is a city that understands that the Strip has this incredible legacy as a venue for amazing billboards. Think the Marlboro Man, think back to the rock and roll billboards of the 1970s. So now it is decided that it is going to, yes, embrace digital billboards, but with conditions. They are that they would be artistically stunning and that these designs would deliver in other ways, revenue sharing with the city, as well as improvements to buildings and public space on the Strip. The idea is that the Strip has long been associated with cruising, driving by in your car, looking at the stunning billboards. They want to make the Strip more appealing as a pedestrian experience. So as part of this process, they brought in a group of seven people that they invited. I was one of them. The group was called the Design Excellence Review Committee, and we were given 43 submittals that we had to look at. And out of this came 21 top scoring designs, and these move forward now into a public approval process.
Not everyone, Francis, is on board with this effort, but we'll get to that in just a moment. I do want to talk about some of the designs, though, that you're talking about that have made the cut. I see images that you have new buildings incorporating this. It looks like Times Square, right? Into their architecture and signs that come in a range of different shapes and sizes.
Well, that's exactly it. So, you know, at one end of the spectrum, there's a sign that was very, very striking called Invisible Frame. The name says it all. The concept was that, yes, this would be an oblong sign on a stick, but the stick and the frame would disappear. They would be coated in a material that allows for the digital art, that means that structure becomes invisible. So all you see is the floating ad. Very striking if it's realizable. Then completely different concept was the Now. That's at 8497 Sunset, or projected to be there. And this would be an entire new building. It would have a mix of shops, offices and restaurants. It would be a rather striking architectural design, kind of undulating concrete walls. And out of that would project a cube shape that would have the digital signage floating on it. And then the building has columns on which they're projecting would be public art by the amazing digital artist Rafik Anadol. So this one would combine public space, it would combine public art, and then your advertising. So there's really a range of approaches, and that's what they were looking for.
As I mentioned, though, Francis, there are some folks who are not happy with this, opposed to the plan. A recent article about the project in WeHoville, which is this local online publication, and there were critics who voiced their opinion. In the comments section, Steve Martin was one of the people who wrote, quote, "The Strip is already pretty loaded with visual distractions. At some point, the advertising revenue will start to cannibalize itself. But the timing is amazing. Just before an election where the city council raised the contribution limit, suddenly the city offers the billboard companies a big bag of goodies. This is just another example." According to Steve Martin, another example of WeHo corporate welfare, because these development rights are worth millions. There was another quote. This is Joe Kornowitz. "The billboard across from the Andaz Hotel is a hazard to see when it pops you at nighttime traveling westbound. I hope there are daytime and nighttime lumen levels that adjust accordingly." So, all right, this is an issue of money. This is a campaign issue. This is, you know, hey, we're getting a lot of money. What do you say to Steve Martin's comment?
Well, I did actually check back to the city with that, and they appreciate the point. And they say this project to create this digital billboard kind of art park has been in the works for a decade. And they say advertising signage has been part of what has defined the Strip for decades and decades. So this is not new. They just want to kind of improve on this kind of signage. And I should say, in terms of urgency, I mean, certainly something that is true of West Hollywood, as with other cities right now, is that all cities have lost revenue due to the pandemic. And so they're all looking to rev up their economic engines. For the City of West Hollywood, this is one of those potential sources of revenue for the city that I think they feel they need. Oh, and in terms of the lighting levels, super important. Absolutely. The issue of lumen levels and how you bring those down at night, all the design teams were asked to address that. The city is very aware that that is a very important consideration.
Frances Anderton, who heads up KCRW's design and architecture desk. Frances, thank you.
You're very welcome, Steve.
Well, as we wrap things up today, a reminder, we're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. What do you think about digital billboards and WeHo's plans to line them up all along the Sunset Strip and elsewhere? Tell us at kcrw.com/askgreaterLA. And while you're there, subscribe to the podcast, too. Tomorrow, baseball is back at Dodger Stadium. There's an alternate reality setting in. And a new women's professional soccer team is coming to town. How it hopes to succeed where others have come up short. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Mario Diaz, Desmond Taylor, Jody Adler, Mike Newport, Mario Saavedra, and Christian Bordahl all had hands and ears on this show today. Thank you for your ears and for your time this evening. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great night.